and welcome to the Unhinged History Podcast, the podcast where two friends come together and compulsively learn history and then info dump upon the other. I may or may not have spent a lot of time having Google Translate repeat names to me today. I'm Teresa.
I'm Angie. I did not spend a lot of time having Google repeat names to me, but what I did do was spend a lot of time watching interviews so I could repeat the names back.
In
I guess
fairness,
that's the same as Google Translate.
I mean, yeah, I like my day started with like texting a friend of mine who is first generation Russian or first generation American from Russia and being like, how do you say this name? And her response was, LOLOL, that is an old name.
You're like, okay, right. But how do you say it, Martha?
But like now, now send the voice memo.
Like, please and thank you. These people are not helping us.
Right?
I don't know anybody from India, so I couldn't phone a friend this time. But what I did have access to was a lot of interviews.
I love this for us.
So,
now,
me too.
I don't know who went first last time, but I will say I have a couple bummer notes in mind.
Okay, I have one bummer note in mind, but okay. It ends in amazing notes.
I mean, I'll just go first. How about that?
Okay, I'll wait here.
Okay. Yeah, because I would really hate to leave everybody on a bummer note on a Friday, because that would suck.
In fact. But I'm looking forward to your story.
I'm going to tell you about a woman. She's been a personal hero of mine for longer than I care to admit. Years ago, I read a book called Neurotribes. And when it got to the point about her, I just started sobbing, like sobbing.
Okay.
And I never thought of presenting her to you. I kind of just kept her in the closet of my mind.
Like in the box?
On the altar. And just was like, we are not going to. And then for whatever reason, I was just like, you know, this posts right before Autism Awareness Day, which is April 2nd. And I thought, you know, okay, like I can do this one. Maybe.
Yes, you can.
Maybe.
I believe
like,
in you.
I did get choked up doing my research on her. I'm going to tell you the story of a woman named Grunya Sukareva.
Okay.
My sources, for they are many. Autism News, I've got two articles from them. How History Forgot the Woman Who Defined Autism by Lena Zedovich. Another one from them, New Evidence Ties Hans Asperger to Nazi Eugenic Programs by Hanna Furfaro. Neurotribes, which I mentioned already, by Steve Silberman. StephanieBethany.com has a blog post, The Woman Who First Defined Autism, Grunya Sukareva. And then IndieRenegade.com has an article, Grunya Efremovna Sukarevna by Sally Wilbanks. And then a medical journal article on the European Child and Adolescent Psychology titled Pioneering and Prodigious and Grunya Efremovna Sukarevna's Life and Contribution to Conceptualizing Autism and Schizophrenia by David.
Hold on. Did you literally just say I'm skipping that word, but then hit
yeah.
me with like five or six Russian words in a go?
But one in English is one that was just like, you know what? Google the rest of the top or the sentence, figure that out. Like, your girl can only do so much right now, right? Like,
I got, dude, I am feeling this.
Okay. But thank you for busting me on that. Don't allow me to get away with murder.
I was just sitting here thinking, wait a minute. She just said that, but then she said that. Are you sure?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because I didn't Google Translate my own language, right? I was like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna be able to get there. I can do that one.
I can say that. Yeah. Well,
and then,
we're talking about hypocritical over here. So.
Right. And so then we hit record. My tongue goes, yeah, goodbye.
And I'm out.
Yeah.
See ya.
Good luck. The last source I have is the British Psychological Society. The Aftermath of Hans Asperger's Exposé, Rabbi David Ariel Schur on Implications for Psychologists. It's going to be the English words that screw me up today.
Because so I did perfected the Russian ones.
I know. So are you ready for this one? Okay. November 11th, 1891. You're already nodding your head like we went back further than I thought she would.
I really thought you were gonna say like November 11th, 1972, because we know so little about women and autism.
Here we go. Here we go. Grunya Efimovna Sukhareva is born to Jewish parents in Kiev, which is part of the Russian Empire at the time.
Okay.
Kiev is now Ukraine, so you know there's a fun tug of war. Yay.
That matters. Yes.
Yep.
Thanks for specifying.
Yep. 1915, she's already earned her degree in medicine at the Kiev Medical Institute. And she's there for 2 years working at the Institute's epidemiological unit. Certain words shouldn't need to be as long or complicated as they are in this thing.
Agreed. Again, English is just three kids in a trench coat.
I don't disagree with you. Okay, so 1917. 2 years after that, she's working as a licensed psychiatrist at the Kiev Psychiatric Hospital, and she works there until 1921. But it's also during this time that you're going to hear but a lot of Oslos. 1919, she's appointed at the head of the defectology department at the Institute of Mental Health and Children's of Adolescence.
What is defectology?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
I'll Google it later.
Okay.
I'm just imagining there's a department for defectors. you go to get relearned.
No, you've said no a lot.
Yeah.
But all this to say, like, she holds several real prominent positions simultaneously.
Get it, mama.
Like, she just isn't a slouch. In 1921, she's 30. She establishes a school for children affected by psychiatric difficulties.
Okay.
Now, I will say, when I was talking to my Russian friend, her response when I had said, you know, who this woman was and everything that she did, she responded with, LOLOL, Russians don't acknowledge mental health.
That checks.
And
that super checks.
We're going to get into this, right? Because our girl that we're talking about, she does acknowledge mental health. The school that she sets up, she titled it Hospital School. And this is at Moscow's Psychoneurological Department for Children. Again,
ooh,
every word on this paper is one you could win Scrabble with. You need every tile, but you're going to win.
And you're going to need to steal the tiles from everyone else.
Yep.
And a blender.
I'd like to buy a valve.
All... Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, one of the peeps in here is a dude named Professor Mikhail Osipovich Gurevich. And Gurevich seems to have been her mentor. He's also listed as her supervisor. But basically, these peeps work very closely together. Now, they're working and doing all this stuff and helping children during a time that their environment is becoming increasingly repressive. And they're both enduring severe criticism from Soviet authorities and fellow academics.
What?
Yeah.
Who knew?
Right? Like,
didn't see that coming.
Yep. Now, if you haven't just loved this woman's ambition, you're going to love her now, because at the school that she's established, well, she's established a school for housing orphans or children that were displaced during World War One and the revolution and the civil war. Russia was busy.
Right. Could you call back, please?
Yeah, like, so these children, they have serious problems. The ones that have serious problems live at the sanatorium for roughly 2 to 3 years. During this time, they're receiving more than just therapy. They're receiving social and motor skill training. They're taking classes in a bunch of really amazing things like gymnastics and drawing and woodwork. They are playing team games, and they're going on outings to the zoo and to other public places.
So they, like, are having a life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like when you send your kid to boarding school, this is what you think you're sending them to. And when you send your kid to an orphanage, you don't think you're sending them to this, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Most of the kids that are able to go through this program are able to join regular schools or music conservatories after this program.
That's amazing. Good
Like,
for
so
them.
they're really rehabilitating these children's spirits.
Absolutely.
So she creates another facility like this. It's dubbed the Forest School, and it houses dozens of children. It's on the outskirts of Moscow. And then, with the staff, over a period of just a couple of years, they evaluate 1,000 children.
Whew.
And she's establishing schools like this all over the country.
Wow, could we use one of her again?
We need one of her right now. She
Yeah,
doesn't even need to iterate.
absolutely.
Just take what you did and we'll do it now.
And just point, tell us where to go.
Yeah, like that's what we, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. We're here for you. You do what you need to do. We'll figure out how to pronounce your name.
We got it. We'll
Yeah.
learn.
The one problem that she's having is that her reach is really stopping at the borders of the country. And this is part because of, the politics, and then part because of language barriers. And an incredibly frustrating part is only a fraction of Russian research from this time is ever translated into any language besides German.
Okay, so not a ton of people can read it and
Yeah,
benefit from it.
right. But
Okay.
she is doing a ton of real critical work. And that's a great transition because it's in 1926 that an article she wrote the year before is translated from Russian into German. The article translates to, I'm going to give you the English translation. I'm not going to try to do German because I feel like I've really pushed my limits as to what my mouth will do properly.
I feel this.
The title is Autistic Psychopaths in Childhood.
Whew.
Now, let me like spell out some things here because there are some real big things that we need to talk about. First off, there's some problematic language if we were to look at this language now. But what we need to recognize is language used at this time is more schizoid psychopathy, and you'd have child schizoid psychopathy. And that just basically means a dozen of disorders.
Right,
Everything from
okay.
what you would consider to autism all the way through full-on hallucination. Like the everything you can think of. You have a mental
It is an
disorder, it
umbrella
falls under
term.
this umbrella. Yeah.
Okay.
Like the DSM-1 isn't published until the 40s. And even then, it's 100 pages long. So
That checks.
you know what I mean? Like we just don't have the language yet. And so she's looking at it, looking at her kids that she's studying, and she's like, schizoid psychopathy is not what I'm going with. I'm going with autistic psychopath, which not a label I would wear right now, but 1926, I mean, this works.
It's much
Now,
friendlier.
yeah, we don't recognize how friendly it is just reading that on its face. Now, we kind of have trouble with tracing it back to her because it was written, her name is written in Cyrillic, and then that translates to German. And so they do like a transliteration. And so they end up spelling her name very differently. Funny enough, this paper is published 20 years before Hans Asperger start really publishing stuff.
Get
20 years,
it.
decades, decades.
Two, in fact.
Right. Now, her article
And I'm
is,
assuming
go
she is,
ahead.
I'm sorry, but she is working with children of both gender, right? Like,
She,
it's not
yes,
just.
she is working with
Okay.
children of both gender. Most of the examples that she has that I have found are in boys, but she comes up with such a very clear and succinct definition that it applies equally to both. Like,
Okay.
you'll see in like earlier renditions of the DSM or even a lot of diagnostic tools, they look and say like child is fascinated with cars and train schedules. And it's like those are very male things. Could we come up with something a little less rigid in gender roles?
Yeah, okay.
It's like
I
you're
am
asking the wrong
fascinated
question.
with train schedules.
Right. I mean, like, who among us? But like, you asked my daughter about breeds of horses, and I hope you have the next 30 minutes free. I mean, because that's the level of detail you're going to get. But I mean, looking at male versus female fixation, there's going to be a, you know, all gap in between.
There's going to be some differences,
right?
At the least. Okay.
Like, heart attacks in females presents very differently than men. So, of course, neurological conditions are the same.
Right. Anyway. Silly girl.
Well, not her, but Hans. I would kick his ass in a heartbeat.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we're just so often put off as being silly or
mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, know. It's our uterus.
Again, floating around.
Yeah, just
causing
doing
problems.
Willy-nilly. So in her article, like, when she's talking about the kids, she uses a very sympathetic and empathetic tone. And that, unfortunately, like, treating these children in a way that shows love is what really separates her from a lot of her male counterparts. She also tends to focus.
She's the worst.
I know. Believing in their success.
Rude.
She notes their improvements that they're making, and she ends up focusing and stressing their talents and intellectual gifts in almost all the cases. So
wild that that works.
Here's what I like. You want to get me to like sob like a little baby? Recognize a lot of the research that I've read. And then these are her notes. Of one kid, she writes, he is deeply emotional and very attached to his sister. If a letter from her arrives, he will hide in the corner and read it on his own rather than be in the presence of witnesses, waiting patiently until he's left alone. Truthful and pedantic. He always takes a principled viewpoint. He has deep feelings for the beauties of nature. He is musically gifted, has a good ear, and rich musical memory. Like,
wow.
I want somebody to say that about me. Like, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Like,
that's someone that recognizes the beauty in each person's differences right there.
Yeah.
Like,
I am watching.
This is how
your
he says,
cat.
I love you.
Lick your neck.
Mm-hmm. He'll do this as long as I hold him.
I'm going to keep reading. Another example, she writes, he is an able artist, and the drawing teacher, himself an artist, assessed him as artistically highly gifted. Another child, she writes, he writes comprehensive articles for children's newspapers, some of which demonstrate excellent literary gifts. He has a journalistic.
I want to know who these people turned out to be as adults.
I know.
Like, do any of them have names?
No, we don't get those.
Well,
and thank you know, like,
yeah, probably not for, you know, HIPAA.
But this is like before HIPAA, right? And in a different country. But we don't have them, and that's fine, you know. But she's just so sweet to these children. And how she talks about them. And you can tell that she literally cares. Like, she gives a shit. And in another, like, when she's talking about the children as a whole, she's talking basically they can adapt successfully if they're given the right conditions. If they're given the tools they need to survive.
Wild.
Yeah. Like, it's incredible that she has this view on this condition when it is something with clinicians are struggling with now.
Yeah.
And there's that, you know, like when you look at her write-ups, they're so detailed and meticulous. Like, she talks about their muscle tone, their gastrointestinal concerns, like everything you can think of. It's all in one file so that she can like go through and systematically look at all the data and cut it however she wants. When she's able to do these reports, modern clinicians immediately see autism. They can recognize these children and they almost get a view of what they look like walking down the street. Like, that
right.
is how vivid her accounts are of these kids. What is the absolute, hands down, most incredible is that she notes the presence of sensory abnormalities, such as heightened sense of hear and smelling, which only gained recognition of ASD in, you want to guess the year?
2017.
13. That was when the DSM-5 was published. Yeah.
That
But
makes
until
sense.
then,
Okay.
it's like clinicians were like, we don't. Okay, so your tag is itchy. Don't talk to me about that.
But it's itchy.
Yeah, it's like, but this is obnoxious. And now they're like, okay, so that might be something that they all face. And we're only going to acknowledge it 90 years after she brings it up.
That's like the equivalent of a wife saying, I told you this last week three times.
You know, and one of my favorite memes is, there's nobody more surprised than a husband hearing his wife's plans for the second time.
Truly.
And I will repeat that to Hubs when he acts surprised about what I'm intending to do. So now I just kind of spring it on him, and I think he just
It's more
assumes I've
fun.
told him before, and he's just like, I can't challenge her.
She said it last week. I know she did.
Yeah, I'm sure she's right. And I'm just like, tee hee hee. I just made that plan this morning.
Like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, we're recording a podcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So, okay, this is all going on. Do 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 do. Sukareva's observations at Moscow's psychoneurological department for children later result in even more articles getting published. From 1928 to 1933, she serves as the associate professor at First Moscow's Medical Institute. She's the head of the psychiatric department, and she's there from 1933 to 1935. Like, so she's just going for it. Now, 35, things are starting to get a little exciting in her neck
Sketchy.
of the woods. She serves as the consultant and director at Kashchenko's Moscow Psychiatric Hospital from 1931 to 1951. And it's in 35 that she successfully defends her doctoral dissertation and established the Child Psychiatric Department and Central Institute for Postgraduate Medical Education, where she served as the head until 1965. Oh, and so she's
Wow.
not doing anything, of course, but she's doing everything. And she's training generations of child psychologists.
Wow.
Now,
Okay.
here's where things get like, holy crap, holy crap, holy crap. During World War II, she's in Kiev, right? She's evacuated to Tomsk, Tomsk. I didn't look that one up. Along with the
Okay.
entire staff of Moscow's Institute of Psychiatry. Okay, so apparently she wasn't in Kiev, she was in Moscow. I lied. So her and other prominent academics, they set up basically like a field hospital, so to speak, but it's a bit more established. And she starts really assessing children and diagnosing them, and treating them, and really helping out. And then in 47, in English, she publishes The Psychological Disturbances of Children During War.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Her paper is like touching on topics that, like, how there's an increase of psychiatric conditions due to exposure from infection, toxins, trauma, and how that's all caused, in her case, by the German forces.
Well,
I mean, like, that's where she was getting these
yeah.
kids from. Now, I have to contrast this with a person I would enjoy kicking royally and repeatedly in the gonads, Hans Asperger.
Please do.
So personal bone to pick with him, and I will leave most of that away. I won't talk about how he only worked on little boys and he refused to identify any girls that had any similar symptoms. I won't talk about that. What I will say is that because there are people who feel that he is the beloved uncle that really like gave them a way out, gave them a label and a diagnosis and really helped them forward. But we're learning a bit more about Mr. Asperger as we uncover more. And it's harder to sweep more and more history under the rug as we learn more. Historian Edith Schaefer visits the Vienna archives. She has a son that's autistic, and she's long been real curious about Asperger. she had thought, when going into this, that he had a very heroic reputation. And she had said, the very first file I found in the archives, I saw that he was implicated in a Nazi program that actually killed disabled children. Now, she is a senior fellow at the University of California, Berkeley's Institute for European Studies. So she's not just a armchair detective.
By my night.
Yeah. Now, Asperger and his closest colleague, colleagues and mentors, really, they were architects of the M. Spiegelgrund's eugenics program, where almost 800 children were killed. And he was traveling at the highest echelons of the killing system. And Schaefer says, I really see him as more than a passive follower. But he didn't join the Nazi party. So, hurrah. On June 27th, 1941, Asperger assessed a young girl named Herta at his clinic. In brief notes, he wrote, quote, "At home, the child must be an unbearable burden to her mother who has to care for five healthy children." Using euphemistic language, characteristic of the German state documents of the period, he wrote, "Permanent placement at Spiegelgrund seems absolutely necessary." A few days later, on July 1st, Herta is admitted to Spiegelgrund, and on September 2nd, a day after her third birthday, she dies of pneumonia.
She was only two?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
How in the world? I am so angry for her right now. Okay, yeah. Carry on. Sorry.
Yep. Now, pneumonia is kind of a fun death for Spiegelgrund, because they would inflict it using a variety of methods. So nearly everybody's death record said pneumonia.
Whether it was pneumonia or not.
Well, it's just like when you drink too much and you're sick the next day because you're hungover because you did it yourself. So it's pneumonia, but it's pneumonia caused by maybe injections and starvation and
any number of ways.
The cruel conditions at this place.
Okay.
Now, I'd hate to say that things get better for her, but even when she died, she's not given dignity because her brain was preserved and used for research alongside hundreds of organs of Spiegelgrund's victims. And the hospital only releases those for burial in 2002.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I was in college.
Wow.
I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we look at how Asperger could have been influenced by her work, no one really knows. So there's two big names in autism and really coming up and really saying, you know, who discovered it, whatever. There's a dude named Connor and then Asperger. And Connor, we really don't know how much they really knew of her work because of, you know, language barriers and whatnot. But they did publish their clinical observations in 1943 and 44. And I mean, in 49, Connor kind of cites Sukariva's paper. So, I mean, he at least read it. Now, they
sort of.
I mean, he cites it as like contributing research that he uses in his body of work. But they're the ones that are cited with uncovering autism. I mean, hell, I mean, honestly, Asperger's syndrome, which is part of the spectrum diagnosis, that's named after Hans Asperger. Like, he's got his name on the thing. So, why wasn't
he put a ring on it?
Oh, did he? Now, there's a lot of people who are, you know, kind of wondering, like, why did we lose her name to history? Like, why don't we know this? Why don't you go, oh, yeah, Sugriva, of course. Like, Sugriva
Syndrome. Right. I totally know that name. Yeah.
Now, it could be a couple of things. I mean, it could be the fact that maybe it wasn't as widely translated, like I said before. It could be the fact that she was a woman. It could be that she was Jewish. And it could be that maybe it wasn't widely distributed. Now, in one of the articles from Spectrum News, there's different speculation. One person, I should have looked up how to say this, Manulienkos says, given the number of psychiatric journals at the time, it's possible that Asperger who's known for Asperger's syndrome, read Sukariva's paper in German and then chose not to cite it. Earlier that year, Edith Schaefer, whom I mentioned earlier, and Berwick Chetz independently reported they found evidence that Asperger's cooperation in the Nazi party, and he may have sent dozens of disabled children to be euthanized. So she's Jewish, she's a female, and he's going to kill a bunch of kids. So maybe it's not a good time.
Kind of busy right now.
Right. But I will say things turn around for her. You know, when you think about like the blot that is the German ignoring her, she is honored in her own country. She's awarded the Order of Lenin, the Order of the Badge of Honor, and the title of Honorable Scientist of the RSFSR. She never had any children. But on April 26th, 1981, she passes away in Moscow after battling a long illness. At age 90, she's laid to rest at a Jewish cemetery alongside her parents and her sister, Maria, a pediatric doctor who specialized in infectious disease, is buried in the same cemetery. That's 81. Wow. In 1996, 15 years after her death, British child psychologist Sulya Wolf stumbles on her 1925 paper and then recognizes that her definition of autism is incredible. Now, this is 96. And that's when she rediscovers her body of work. 2013, the DSM-5 publishes their updated definition of autism that mirrors large portions of her definition of the condition.
Good.
And then in 2017, Gruinov, son of a bitch, Luzariva, and Sharivko wrote of Suhariva. They say it's difficult to overestimate her contribution to the training of personnel for scientific and medical institutions of the country. Apart from supervising several generations of clinical trainees, over 30 doctoral dissertations were completed under Sukariva's supervision. Sukariva was able to instill leadership qualities in her students, and her disciples went on and founded psychiatric schools on their own and occupy headship positions in Russia's primary psychiatric hospitals and professional bodies.
Wow.
I mean, that was only a couple years ago when you think about it. And then Sally Wilbanks said something that I'm going to leave on because it was just absolutely incredible to word it. She states, "I can only imagine how the journey of autism would have been different if Sukariva's writings were widely distributed and her findings understood. Sukariva was kind, compassionate, observant, and understanding. She launched schools like the sanatorium across Russia. Thousands of children were observed, cared for, took classes in gymnastics, drawing, and woodwork, and taken to zoos and other public places. This is vastly different to the experiences of children later diagnosed as autistic, who are often locked away in mental institutions and maltreated by clinicians practicing their torturous forms of behavioral therapy. If only her findings had been discovered earlier. It's too late to change the past, but it's not too late to recognize the amazing woman who is Gronya Efremovna Sukariva."
Wow. I had no idea.
And this is, you know, I'd listen to people who briefly touched on her when I was like in a sauna at the gym, and I would just start sobbing because it would bring up all of this.
Yeah, that's God bless her. Yeah. I have so many questions. I'm gonna need some books. I want to know the healthy outcomes that these children had in their lives. Like, I need to know all the things. He's back, by the way.
The cat is back, perched on her chest, trying to stare lovingly into her eyes, getting her to leave the microphone.
He is a giant baby. Ugh. Wow. Well, we have some very inspirational ladies today.
So who are you bringing me from India?
Kalpana Chawla.
I love this. I don't know anything about her.
So I am going to tell you about astronaut Kalpana Chawla, who was the first Indian-born woman in space.
Ooh.
Yeah. My sources are space.com, the National Air and Space Museum, several pages of the National Air and Space Museum, some great YouTube videos that are her like interviews and little roundabouts of her life, and her father's obituary, which I think is wild that to tell her story you get to speak to her father's obituary. But anyway.
Yeah.
So Kalpana was born to parents Banasari Chawla and his wife, Sanjawithi, if I'm saying that right, I believe I am, Chawla.
Okay,
on
Chawla
March
was the last
17,
name.
1962. Chawla is the last name, yeah.
Okay. This does not sound
just,
Indian.
I know, but Indian from India, Indian.
Right. No, I figured I
Yeah.
didn't, but you know, like I just assume Chawla is Mexican.
Well, if it helps to tell you, when I was watching the videos on how to pronounce the name, they actually pronounced it Chavala.
Okay, that
The W
resonates
is a
more.
V,
Okay.
right? But my mouth is not always making that sound.
Look, I mean, with as many words I fumbled through that actually sounded fairly decent, and then I couldn't say words in English, like
Here
I
we are.
sympathies.
Thank you. So, like I said, she's born in March of 1962. She's 3 years old the first time she sees an airplane flying above her home. And she immediately develops this massive interest in flying. Her father would spend days taking her and her brother to the local flying club and kind of just fostered this appreciation. Now, what's really interesting is that the area that she was born at in India is one of the few places in India at the time that even had a flying club.
So she
So
got real lucky.
She won the lottery on a lot of things. So I've heard of this before, but I didn't realize it's still practiced, I guess, or at least back then it was still practiced. She hadn't been formally named. Her parents always called her Montu, but that wasn't her formal name. Like, she was never given a name until she started school, at which point she was allowed to choose her own name.
Is that common?
I've heard of it happening before, but I did not realize it still happened. And I thought that, like, I think I just had a real misunderstanding of how it worked.
Right.
So the name Kalpana means idea or imagination.
She named herself Idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'd
Or
have named
imagination.
myself like Pegasus. You know what
Right?
I mean? Like,
Like,
I would not have, you can't trust 5-year-old Teresa to name herself. It would have been Sparkly Dog Poo. That's my name. I'm Sparkly Dog Poo.
Just call me by my name, please, and thank you.
Yeah.
Right? So you can tell already, even in her just short years of life so far, she is full of it. She's going to do the thing. She's not going to be told no. Here we are. So she attends her earlier education in India, and she goes to school in an area called Karnal. And then at the Punjab Engineering College, Chawla obtains a degree in aeronautical engineering. Space.com says, quote, "When selecting the course, professors tried to dissuade her as there were limited opportunities for girls in India following this career path. However, Chawla was adamant that this was the subject for her." And all I'm saying is, get it, girl. Do the thing, right?
Yeah, don't take no lip.
Don't take no lip. Once she completed her engineering degree in India, she comes to the United States. So it's like the early 80s. She becomes a naturalized citizen so that she can continue her education here in the States. But, like, also don't think she was all study and no fun, because on December 2nd of 1983, she marries Jean-Pierre Harrison. So
nice. Way to
is
find
now
love.
us, right? Like, she is empowered. She is on a mission. She is going to school. She is doing the thing, but she has found a man she is quite fond of, and they put a ring on it. At the right around the same time, she obtains her master's degree from the University of Texas and also earns a doctorate in aerospace engineering from the University of Colorado in 1988. Chawla begins working at NASA's Ames Research Center that same year. At the time, she's working on powered lift computational fluid dynamics. And I'm going to be really honest with you and tell you, I don't know what any of those words mean in the same sentence.
They sound
But that's what
great.
she is working on.
Most of those sentences I said, or words I said in sentences just now, they didn't exist separately to me prior.
Exactly, right? So at this time, her work is focusing on how the understanding of how air flows around aircraft during flight and how to incorporate computers into this work.
Okay.
By this point, she is now collecting licenses. She has several pilot licenses, like airplanes, gliders, seaplanes. If you can fly it, she's got the license for it. She is gonna do it. In 1994, she is one of only 20 applicants accepted into NASA's astronaut program out of a pool of nearly 4,000. That was a wild statistic for me. 4,000 people showed up, and she was one of only the 20.
Nice.
Right? And she would see space as a specialist the first time on November 19, 1997. She launches on board Space Shuttle Columbia as part of the STS-87. On this mission, she specializes in operating the robotic arm, which she actually used to deploy the Spartan satellite. I thought that was so cool that we have this information and we can just say it.
Yeah.
Right? During that 16-day mission, the crew conducted numerous experiments. Their focus was on material science and like how materials would behave in space, as well as planet reproduction. On this trip, they orbited around the Earth 252 times.
Whoa.
That was wild information for like I don't know why I thought in my mind like that would take, 252 days. Like my brain just didn't.
Wait, doesn't it?
They were on the mission for 16 days.
I'm
So
what?
math that out. Yeah. I don't know
Okay.
enough about aerophysics to be able to tell you how or why that worked, but
You know, you say that, and
engines.
the only knowledge I really have of space comes from Monty Python. Just remember that you're spinning on a planet that's revolving at
That's the
900
one.
miles an hour. It's
Yeah.
orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned around the sun that is the source of all our power. And I haven't even trained for this one, but I'll stop.
No, please go on.
The sun and you and me
I
and all the stars that we can see.
I thought I knew a little bit about how space flight worked because I'm a huge fan of space. In honor, I am wearing a space t-shirt. You can't see it, but
I see
I'm
a two planets.
a planet. I will have you know that I was going to wear my Occupy Mars shirt, but Ethan, it's actually Ethan's. He wore it and it's dirty. And so he really let me down today, but here we are.
Yeah, kids.
Rude. I didn't want to smell like roast beef, you know?
Yeah, that's the
Here
default
we are.
smell of teenage boys.
In fact, so all that to say, Chavala would make history as the first Indian woman and the first South Asian American woman to fly in space. During this flight, the Indian Prime Minister Indar Kumal Gunjal called Chawla in space to congratulate her on her journey and express pride in her representing India in space. Earlier today, I got to listen to that phone call.
What?
I actually cried about it. It's all you can listen to so many of their transmissions. It's fantastic. But listening to the Prime Minister of India praise her and thank her for the work she's doing, launching other women into careers in STEM and representing both America and India in her goals
Yeah.
was just, for me, it was so powerful to hear, but to hear especially a place like India where not that long ago little girls weren't given educations.
Yeah.
Right? Like so it was just really impactful for me to hear that, and I recommend everybody go listen to it. She goes to space a second time. On January 16th, 2003, Chawla launches on board the Space Shuttle Columbia one more time as part of the STS-107. During this 16-day mission, the crew performs 80 scientific experiments, with Chawla overseeing and conducting microgravity experiments, on crystal growth, combustion, fire suppression, as well as prostate cancer in space.
Huh.
So, like
now,
I said,
wait. How do you study prostate? Like, she doesn't have a prostate.
You're right, she doesn't, but what they're doing is taking the science with them to figure out how it reacts to the microgravity. Like, what can we learn about cancer in space? Like, what happens there, right? So,
I mean,
and
I had a feeling that's what
area...
would have happened, and I don't know why you need to be the owner of one to do it. I mean, men have been practicing medicine on women for ever.
Unclear, but I know they have the science there on board with them.
Okay. All right.
Right. Along with six other members of the team, including Commander Rick D. Husband, Pilot William C. McCool, which is an amazing name.
I was still hung up on husband.
I know, that's the last name, Rick D. Husband.
Right? Yeah.
Pilot William C. McCool, Mission
His name is
Specialist
Dickie
David...
Husband.
It sure is.
Sorry. I'm done. I'm done.
It's
I'll
okay.
stop. I'll leave it alone. Like,
Are you
McCool
good?
is a cool name. It's a cool name. And I'll go with McCool. But I don't, I just, that was the first one at the gates. So that's the one I went with.
Okay. I'm going to start this paragraph again so you can feel the real weight of it.
All
If you
right.
say something about Dickie.
It's just in my head. It'll just be in my eyes.
Along with six other members of the team, including Commander Rick D. Husband, Pilot William C. McCool, Mission Specialist David M. Brown, Michael P. Anderson, and Laura B. Clark, and a payload specialist called Ilian Roman, as well as Chawla, they were tragically killed February 1, 2003, when on re-entry, the Space Shuttle Columbia breaks apart.
I'm glad I got my joke in early.
I'm glad I restarted the paragraph.
Yeah.
Yeah. So while this event is incredibly tragic, they were able to recover a portion of their science that they had were working on in space. So we did learn some things from that. NASA ends up closing down the space program for 2 years to investigate what happened. And the long and short of it is a piece breaks off at liftoff. And when they re-entered the, I'm not going to say atmosphere, but like the ice coming through basically
just
gets in
took the
and
rest of it.
demolishes. Right.
Oh.
Which is heartbreaking. But I really wanted to tell her story because I think like Sally Ride, she was such, I mean, she literally broke the last glass ceiling, right?
Yeah.
Like, and her story is so inspirational. Space.com has this beautiful quote about her and her legacy. Chawla's legacy has lived on. However, in particular, her talent and hard work have inspired young people in India and around the world to consider careers in spaceflight. Additionally, every year, the Kalpala Chawla Award is given to outstanding Indian women of science and engineering.
Yes.
So I think that's really special.
Yes.
She was also she was so serious about education that she helped provide science education opportunities for young girls in India. So during her time as an astronaut, NASA would invite children from her secondary school to take part in NASA's Space Summer Experience Program. So each year from 1998 on, the school sends two girls to the Foundation for International Space Education, it's United States School in Houston. Chawla would personally invite them into her home for a real Indian dinner. And I think that just, like, spoke to my heart. Like, I'm going to help fund your education. I'm going to do the thing to push you all forward because it's not just her that she's doing this for.
Right.
And I think that's so, so important. She was posthumously awarded the Congressional Space Medal of Honor, the NASA Space Flight Medal, and the NASA Distinguished Service Medal. Okay. 16 years after her death, at a viewing of the documentary Dreams That Touched the Sky, her father said this: "I think she came to the world with some blessings of the Almighty. She was different and she was special from her childhood. As a father, all I did was not clip her wings. She wanted to fly. I let her fly. She came, she conquered, and she flew away after inspiring many lives. She was one of those girls who excelled in everything that she did and every drop she tried." And I cried.
Yeah, you're hitting me in the feels.
Right? In 2022, in 2020, NASA launches the commercial spacecraft, the Kalapana Chawla, to take supplies to the International Space Center, which I thought was amazing. Now, her father, Banasahari, passes away at 90. And there's this blurb that just got my heart. In his obituary in the Indian Times, it says, "Chawla was undergoing treatment for the past few days following an illness. His body will be donated to Cornell's Kalpana Chawla Medical College," sources close to the family say. She has rockets. She has buildings. She has space education centers, colleges, medical centers named after her because she was just so important to their people. And I think it's so important we know her name.
Yeah.
And then, because it's always inspiring to know this, there are a handful of modern, currently living young lady astronauts that are following in her footsteps. So there is Alyssa Carson, and her Instagram handle is at NASA Blueberry.
Hell yes. I'm here for that handle.
I love it. She is an astrobiologist and PhD student. Alyssa is the youngest person to be accepted into the Advanced Possum Space Academy, which is an educational program for aspiring astronauts. She is also slated to be one of the first people on Mars.
Oh.
Right? And then there's Kelly Girardi, who is a mom and an astronaut, author, and a speaker on a mission. While nearly 600 men have spent time in space, less than 100 women have successfully flown in space, and two of them flew on Virgin Galactic's most recent suborbital spaceflight in November. Girard and Katie Meisenrug are the 92nd and 93rd women to fly in space, according to the Supercluster's astronaut database. And Kelly might be my real-life living hero. Here's a quote from her when talking about women in space. "When my mom was growing up, and when she was born, human beings hadn't yet been to space, and women weren't yet eligible to be astronauts in the United States. When she was a little girl, just one generation later, she was watching her daughter fly to space, and she's watching her granddaughter take that for granted, and I think that's just what girls do."
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So she, full circle, has a very dear friend called Sariisha Bundala, and she is an Indian-American astronautical engineer and space tourist. She is the vice president and government affairs at the research operations for Virgin Galactic.
Wow.
Right? I have pictures.
Please and thank you.
You're welcome. So here she is in her bright orange, right? Isn't she a cutie? Like,
yeah.
She's got your classic long, dark, very like, luscious hair.
I recognize that the proportion of spacesuit to human is the same for men, but men have broader shoulders. And so she's just a little.
She looks like she's wearing her dad's costume.
Yeah, like, and I feel right? bad that you said that, but you're right. Like, I wanted to avoid, like, you know, but yes.
That's what it looks like. But what's really interesting about this is Kelly, one of the last astronauts I was speaking about, one of her jobs is to test flight suits. So they're custom made to their measurements. And there's some really, really cool videos to see. You can watch online. They're amazing. So here she is again.
She's got the biggest smile. Yes.
So her nickname in the U.S. is just Casey. And she had so many people that just adored her. I mean, how could you not look at that smile, right?
Yeah.
Like, here she is again.
Her hair's
and
shorter
here
there.
is yeah. Here she is. This is the crew from the space shuttle, the last space shuttle Columbia.
Oh.
Right? So I absolutely adore her, and I have to thank my husband for finding her for me, because I said to him the other day, I don't have any like really awesome stories about women of Asian descent, of like any of the Asian,
Yeah.
You know, like I want like one really good one. I feel like I have all these European ones or these American ones, but I just, and he found her immediately. And because like I'm an idiot and didn't think to look on the old Google. But
Well,
then
let
I
me pull
remembered that
out the Google.
Right? And then I was like, but wait a minute. I just recently started following this female astronaut because she. So, astronaut Kelly does a ton
NASA
of
Blueberry.
social. No, that's
Oh, that's
Alyssa.
Alyssa Carson. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Kelly Giardi does a lot of social media things. And she's an author, and she's written books for little girls on moon landings and things like that. So she's just really inspirational in herself. And her whole goal is to say, like, you can do whatever you want to do and look however you want to look while you do it. Like, you can be as girly as you want to be and still go to space. See, I'm doing it. Like, you see
Yes.
her space pictures, and she's got her full face of makeup on and her beautifully straight
Oh.
hair, and she is just killing it all the while training so hard to become an astronaut, right? Like,
Doing it
and her
backwards in
daughter's
heels.
name, right? Her daughter's name, this is my favorite part, and I'm going to read to you what she said. And this was the reason I had to do both of these ladies, or mention both of these ladies, rather. Yes, she's Delta Victoria for Delta V, or change in velocity as used in spacecraft flight dynamics. Her daughter's name is Delta Victoria.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome?
You know, I really
And
love it when NASA geeks name things. Like, when
so
you
do
let
I.
the geeks do it.
Agreed. So I'm gonna send you, because I didn't have time to incorporate this picture into my notes, but I just sent you a screenshot of Kelly and her best friend, that's the vice president of government affairs at Research Operations from Virgin Galactic.
Okay, I
In
will tell.
2012,
Do you want me to explain what
they
I'm
made a
seeing?
promise. You
Go
can
ahead.
if you want, yeah.
Okay, so image one is, well,
Miss
or,
Kelly.
yeah, and okay, first off, both women have looks of sheer bewilderment, right? Kelly is gorgeous with like the best eye makeup that I have ever seen, let alone in space.
Right? Yeah.
And then beneath her is another woman.
Sharishia, I'm going to butcher her name. She says it beautifully, but I cannot. Bundala.
Okay.
Bundala. Bundala is her last name. I can say that. Bundala.
Anyhow, you were going to say about who they were, what they did, like them being friends.
Yes. Okay. So this image you're looking at is both of them seeing Earth from space for the first time.
She got to go up in space with her best friend?
No, but what's awesome about it is in 2012, they promised each other they would be at each other's first launches, and they were. Bundala went first like 5 years later, and then Kelly a few years after that, and there are pictures of them attending each other's launches, and this is
Oh.
the image that they took for each other when they went to space.
Oh no, that is adorable.
Right? So, like, not only do we get women being amazing, we get women cheering other women on, and there's just not enough of that in the world, and I am
No.
100% behind this friendship.
Yeah.
So that's my story about the literal ceiling crashing Kapala
Well,
Chavala
not literal ceiling
and all her
crashing.
friends.
You
Well,
use
she broke the
literally.
last ceiling.
No, I mean, okay, like, but not literally. She didn't.
No, not literally. Figuratively, you're right.
Oh, you know,
Figuratively.
leave it to me to
Pardon.
get hung up on a technicality.
Now, you know what the crazy thing is, though, and I would love to know. I was thinking about this just before I got off work. Sally Ride was still alive when
Oh.
she was working for NASA. So I'm really curious how, if they got to cross paths, if she got to ask questions, if they got to work together on anything. Like, I would love to know that. But that question crossed my mind like minutes
I mean, I
before we
want to
were set
say
to
that they
record.
did, right? Like, because she was such a big member of the community
That's what I'm thinking.
until her death, right? I can't imagine that she, like, it's not like she retired and was like, well, I'm going to go start a horse ranch in Montana. You know,
Bye.
like,
Well, that's exactly what Captain Pike did.
you're not wrong. That
Yeah,
was gorgeous.
That was.
I'm grateful you went
Welcome.
last.
You're welcome.
Because I mean, mine ended positive, you know, like where it's like, hey, look, she was honored, all of this stuff, but like, how would life have been different?
Truly. Yeah. At first, I was like really questioning, like, I don't want to, it's still too soon to do Challenger. Like, that's still too soon. But then when I could hear the recordings, when I could hear the transmissions and realized, like, we as 18-year-old, 19-year-olds didn't know, right? Like,
Yeah.
little Angie had no idea there were lady astronauts, and why didn't I? And that's a story that needs to be told.
You know, and like, okay, so we talked about this with Bessie Coleman, right? How Bessie Coleman showed girls and Black people and Black girls that you could be an aviatrix. But if you have just the Amelia Earharts, you don't get to touch the Black community and the Black female community.
Representation matters.
So much so.
Yeah. I read, oh gosh, I just now remembered. I didn't put this in my notes. I read a story from her father. I don't remember the exact location, but she had requested that her ashes be spread.
Yeah.
And in one of her last letters, she had said something to her parents about how she was thinking that she might like to buy a house in the mountains or something like that. And she had said, like, this near this area.
Yeah.
And so I don't think her family, if I remember right, I don't think her family was going to spread the ashes, but I think they were going to visit out of to pay their respects because that's where she wanted to be. I'm not real clear. They might have been spreading ashes, but I'm not clear. So, like, don't
Okay.
quote me on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, they get to this just like beautiful overlook and they see a young lady there and she is like hunched over and kind of crying, kind of melancholy. And Coppola's father asks, "Are you okay?" And she said, "Well, I was so and so's was my mentor and such an inspiration to me. And she paid for my education. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for her. It was Coppola that paid for her education." And I was like, oh, could you imagine being that dad, hearing that and knowing that this young lady came to pay her respects because somebody else took the time and effort to help her get to the next step.
I would be so broken.
Right? I'm sorry I made you cry.
Again.
Good tears. Good to like.
Good
good
tears. Good
tears.
tears. Good tears. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Going out on Women's History Month with a bang.
Yeah.
Of tears.
So
soon.
Lift your margarita. Drain it if you have to. Or your soup bowl, whatever that was. Is that a bowl of macaroni and cheese?
Yes.
Girl, I love you. Eating our feelings, drinking our feelings, feeling our feelings.
Do all the feelings, you know?
Yeah, like if you process feelings through eating or drinking or listening to us, freak, then, you know,
oh, weirdos.
I know, rate, review, subscribe, share us with your favorite pasta maker. And on that note, goodbye.
Goodbye.